now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away. All with our award-winning commentary, opinion, and insights. Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and The Sunday Times, now with goals.
All right, I want to do a quick segment on England, partly because they played last night, partly because we've had a special request.
Oh, yeah.
My mind, the greatest goal I've ever seen.
And mine.
And yours, too. But only one of us was on the pitch that day.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell us what happened?
Someone's just asked me out there. So I'll tell you what happened. Middle of the park, Glenn Hoddle's on the ball. And, and you know Glenn. He tries to find God with one of them long passes. But I hope he doesn't listen to this. Diego turns me in the middle of the park. And Peter Beardsley. Silly Bollocks starts running after him. Peter Beardsley, God love him, with that little hunchback. He didn't want to run back, did he? So he left it. So I'm chasing him. He does Fennec, who'd been booked, yellow card, so we didn't want to bring him down. Been sent off. He does Teddy Butcher. Yeah, with great skill. And then he drives into the inside right position. Shilts come out like a bag of shit. Gary Stevens on the cover, doesn't get there. The great man rolls it in the bottom corner. All to do with me.
Obviously, England's out there, and I can tell you, having lived in this country for a long time, I see a very familiar pattern with the England team, is that in public opinion, England are either fantastic, full of world-class players, nobody can stand in their way, or they're absolute turds. There really is no middle ground. And was it like this in your day, Peter?
I was Peter the Third, yeah. Anyhow. Listen, there's always great expectations on England sides because we've got this mentality. We've created football. We should be winning the World Cup. And unfortunately, you know, the team that we got in the quarter final, 1990, got the semis, got done on pens. So certain things happen, some good players are just, for some reason, we had a generation, Stevie G was been a fantastic player, that generation of the Beckham, the Scholes, and you think, that generation, you're thinking, now they can't, and we never got anywhere near it. So I'm thinking, now, international football, and you'll find this, is like possession and in holes and in intelligence. And that's what, when it comes to the big games, the likes of Spain, the likes of France when they had the good sides, Brazil and Argentina, do it better than us. Get in holes, you know the game. I played against their Argentina. Tactically, their coach was really bright spark. You know, he went man for man on us and let a couple of players who weren't clever on it after ball, and so expectations, we've got to get them right. We want to go and win it, we want to do this, but with the eighth, if we get to the quarter final, the bottom line is we've done well.
But do you think, you know, going back there, I mean, a similar situation to now in many ways, you know what, he didn't put Barnes on and let him loose and let him run at them until, like, you know, the game was gone almost, and like
he dragged me off as it happens. Thanks for that.
Come off, well, the
you was, wouldn't you?
Game.
No, to be fair, to be fair, he changed the system, Bob, because when we started off, he had Wilkins, Robbo, Hoddle in the middle of the park, and Barnsley left. Now, Barnsley, besides, but John Barnes was one of the best players I played against. They're fantastic footballer. But for some reason, they take the Brazil goal. He didn't really do it for England. And in the early games, he struggled. But when he come on a sub in that game, he was on fire. And I think he brought Waddler on as well. Mm. You know, and we were on fire in them games. But for the reason I said, he struggled. He didn't start him.
But do you think there's a parallel like today? Because like, it seems to me that Hodgson's got loads of pace available to him. And like, and he's not playing them. And he won't.
Well, see, you see, people say that he's methodical. Hey, he went into two qualifying games against Ukraine and Poland and play a lad called Townsend, and we all went, what? Is he mad? And the boy come up with the goods for him, using pace. Yeah. Now, whatever you think about Roy, and I thought he had a good time at Liverpool. I can't understand why he goes out there. Okay, now. Get him back there tomorrow. Anyhow. Whatever you say about him, he knows the game, and I think that the likes of Sterling, Sturridge, he'll use him. I think he'll use pace, because over there, depending on where you are, I mean, this is not an excuse. It was a wee bit hot for a heightened lad in Mexico City. Let me tell you, and in Monterrey when we had the group games. So you've got to conserve your energy, drop off, pass the ball, and then that pace becomes essential. Against the teams, which are, by the way, there's some great teams, isn't it? You look at the Brazil, the Argentinians, the Belgians, the Spanish. I tell you what, there's some great teams. But I tell you what hurts people, the biggest thing, pace.
Yeah.
Pace is the biggest thing that hurts
people.
Speed
kills.
And in international football, that is the buy. And whatever you say about him, he did that with Switzerland when he was in there. He had pace up there. So I think he'll go along with that. I do think he'll go with that pace.
Well, just to get a sense, obviously, World Cup coming up this summer. Can you guys just put your hands up again if you think England are going to get out of the group stage, please?
I think they will, yeah.
All right. Now, please put your hands down if you think England are going out the round of 16.
I think they'll get the round of 16.
All right. How many people think England are going out at the quarterfinals?
Me.
Anybody believe in semis? All right. Okay. All right. So you guys, basically the general mood is same shit as the last couple times out. Yeah?
You know what? I think they've got an opportunity. I think there's a lot of like reasonable teams there. I don't think there's anyone particularly outstanding. I mean, clearly
you don't think Spain or Brazil or Germany are outstanding.
Well, yeah.
Relative
yeah.
to England.
I don't think Germany outstanding actually. I don't. I think Spain are outstanding, but they're not going to win it on the South American continent.
Why not?
South American team are going to win.
Why?
That's what history tells us.
Okay, can I say on that point of history, because this is one of Pepe's. In the last 50 years, there's been one World Cup in South America, and admittedly, a South American team won it, albeit one with had martial law, and they were at home, and they had generals and people with guns, and people were disappearing, and they fixed the game against Peru. And they still lost to Italy that tournament. I don't know. How is that statistically relevant in this day and age?
I think Argentina or Brazil are going to win.
Right? I mean, that makes them my choice. I'm going to turn to you, Tony, because you're a little more objective here in the sense that you're not an England fan at all, and you don't even have to pretend to be one, unlike Tony some of the time.
He lives in London.
Exactly, he lives in London. One of the things that's often been mentioned, I think Jamie Carragher, for one, talked about it, but Frank Lampard has as well, that they don't really enjoy playing for England the way they do with the club sides. And I want to get you on this in a minute, Peter, as well, whether that was the case with you.
No, I absolutely adored it. And one of the best feelings ever is when the national anthem's ringing out and you've got them three lines on your shirt. It is absolutely amazing. And I go to the cricket, and when that Jerusalem is on, I absolutely adore it. Even though we're full of South Africans in the cricket team, I still adore it.
One down.
There you go. I absolutely adore this country. I have, as a lot of yous here, we've got Irish grandparents. We have them. That's the way we talk like this. But my country's England, where I was born, in Liverpool. which is one of the great cities in England, and I am proud to have played for England.
Now, when I said they didn't enjoy it, I wasn't suggesting
it was because
we weren't patriotic, but it's for another reason. It's that with their club sides, they usually won, and even when they didn't, the fans tended not to get on their back. Maybe they got on the back of worse players and whatever. Mm. With England, they felt that the media were always immediately out to get them the minute they screwed up. England fans, but maybe if they supported other clubs, would get on their back. With England, sometimes they weren't the best players out there. Is this something you've picked up? And why are the media harder on England than they would be on, say, United or Liverpool? Assuming they are.
Amazing, isn't it?
You only have to watch England to see that the players aren't enjoying it. If you watch the game last night, you watch Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney is not enjoying playing for England at the moment.
But the media love England. The media are desperate for England to win.
That's the problem, isn't it, when it doesn't happen?
So badly. And it makes them angry. Makes us laugh. Makes them angry.
Listen, the media, and especially newspaper men, know all about the game and tactics. They are brilliant. They are brilliant. And by the way, let me tell you about this media. So Bobby Robson, who was revered, you know, Mexico, the press before that Polar game vilified him.
And the Euros in
88 vilified him. And
the
it was absolutely outrageous what happens. But like I said before, as time changes, when Everton get a new owner, I'll put it in again. As times change, the press's view on Sir Bobby changed.
Well, but
now with England, I thoroughly enjoy playing for them. I've got to say, now as the game goes on, do you know? Sometimes when I watch football, I'm not sure whether, and this is not just England, I'm not sure about the lads enjoying it. I would give anything now to go back and play in a derby game. It was I've never touched drugs in it. Well, yeah, that's a drug, isn't it? But it was the best thing ever. I mean, it was so good. I'm not sure they enjoy it.
But Peter, it's become so cynical, and I think it's at the players' cost. If you look at the Jan Vertonghen incident last week with Spurs, when the lad goes to Boston, there's a little bit of contact. First thing I thought of was you and Steve McMahon. In a derby, one of the most biggest shuddering tackles I've ever seen. Smack into each other in the halfway line, Anfield. First thing they do, it's like a race to get up. Yeah. And they both get up and they tap each other on the head. Well done, play on.
See, there's some things never change. Listen, I played in school, and my half fella, God rest his soul, he was brilliant, my half fella. His only problem was he was a red, but he was brilliant. But I'll tell you what he said to me when you were out on that pitch. Don't let anybody show that you're hurt. Yeah. By the way, he'd have clipped me. If I'd have got, and I go to games now, I hear squealing. Mm. I hear,
Wilshire the other night. Wilshire the other night, for God's sake.
With great respect, right. I thought.
Fabio Barini gave the biggest squeal I've ever heard.
Okay, all right. Sorry, excuse me.
The other thing was, which I've got to say, me and a fellow went, you know, if one of your lads goes out of position, just fell into them. By the way, football ain't rocket science. They go on with 4-3-2-1, 4-4-2, 4-3-3. Just use your brain.
Do you know what?
Just drop in the hole if you're getting outnumbered in the middle of the park.
Peter, I'm not an England fan, but at the right umber bad, the Ukraine game, you know, there's Kyle Walker playing like right back, and he's having a nightmare. The Turgis is him. And there's Theo Walcott in front of him, doesn't even look over his shoulder. You know what? Drop in. Help him.
Well, I was one of them players on the pitch. If one of the lads, and we used to have fights. I used to get sent in training because at Everton, we couldn't tackle. And then Trevor Stephen, he kept nicking me because he'd be brilliant. Like, so I can't tackle. Anyhow, I smash him. He goes up there. Colin Harvey, off. You get off. I says, what do you mean get off? You want me to tackle on a Saturday? No tackling training. Get off. And then I come in at the end of it and I go, oh, sorry, Trev, tricky. He went, nah, no problem. And we got on with it,
So he's saying he couldn't tackle. And I'll tell you what, I've just finished a book about the 83-84 Liverpool team, and Craig Johnson said to me, he said, derbies, he said, you understand, they were meatier than other occasions. He said, we wanted to hurt each other. He said, and you get reedy, he said, and he'd hit you. He said, you know what? Show no pain, show no fear, and it's him back.
But no, I've got a picture of me and Steve McMahon going for the tackle. We're both like this.
Straight red.
And do you know if it was a spot the ball competition, you wouldn't get it in a minute.
That was in the warm up.
On my life, true story. Yeah, I see Steve quite often. I go to Singapore, and he's based over there. So, you know. We even kick each other at the bar these days.
Great times. This is meant to be our England chat. I don't want to do a disservice. I am a guest in this country. Anybody have a burning England-related question they want to ask, or shall we move on to the red half of Merseyside? All right,
That's the end of that story.
It's a nice segue. It says here, topic 4, Suarez, how do people feel now?
Ask people.
Well, I want to ask person first, because obviously you covered this from a reporting standpoint. You've spoken to people. You presumably form your opinion by mixing things people say on the record and mixing what people say off the record. Can you just explain, for those who don't get it, you have somebody who's so committed on the pitch, says all the right things, is adored by Liverpool fans, but then went out of his way to put a clause in his contract allowing him to negotiate with another club, but we know what that meant. And who obviously at one point wanted to, you know, I don't think it's any secret, you know, gave an interview, said he wanted to leave. He wanted to move to a different club. How do we reconcile all these things?
I think you reconcile it in the fact that he's a modern footballer, and you reconcile in the fact that Liverpool Football Club couldn't give him the things that he desired, which was Champions League. I took my lad to his first game about 12 months ago, and I said to him, this wasn't a day when Luis Suarez was being A, racist, or B, biting anyone. I said, if you want to learn how to be a footballer, watch him. Because I watch 2 or 3 games a week, and I watch numerous games on television. The only footballer I see who's got that kind of passion and will to win is Luis Suarez. He's got that every single game. Liverpool 4-0 up against Norwich. He scored 3, one of the best hat-tricks you'll ever see. And he's going nuts that he hasn't been given a pass. He's kicking posts and all. I've never seen that kind of passion. Even in Peter's day, I think he's a one-off. I don't think he's particularly... I think he's a bit wrong in the head, I've got to be honest. but that wrongness in the head makes him, for me, one of the top 3 players in the world.
All the great players are loons, Peter. You know, I mean...
Gary Lineker? You calling Gary Lineker a loon?
He wasn't a great player.
No, wasn't a great player.
Great goal scorer.
Well, no. I'll tell you what, I was saying to Peter earlier on. I'll tell you what.
Tom Finney.
Loons. But what I was saying, you know, talking about Gary Lineker, to digress, the Everton team that
Peter
plays were brilliant. Suarez. And you know what? When Lineker come in, he made that great midfield sit too deep. And, you know, he scored 40 goals, but what did they win that year?
Are you trying to get me at it?
No,
bringing back bad memories.
I'm saying that you...
Right, Suarez, absolutely outstanding. You going on me?
Yeah, don't go on. You tell me about Suarez.
Absolutely.
How was he playing?
Absolutely fantastic football.
What would you do?
Great, will you let me finish? Yeah. Great centre of balance, great awareness, pace, knows where everybody is on the pitch. Absolutely outstanding. Obviously, he didn't have an owl fella like me. Because when there's a strong wind, he's over.
Well, how would you play him, Peter?
Dives.
How would you play him? What would you do?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he has a struggle against the top sides, allegedly.
That's been thrown up this season, and
I'm sorry to make any comments. You know,
he hasn't scored against Arsenal, Chelsea or Manchester City. He's only played Man City and Chelsea away.
Right.
I think he hit the post in one of those against Arsenal, hit the post.
Well, it doesn't count as a goal.
No, it doesn't count. Right.
I'll give you that.
Seriously. No, I'm asking a different question. Would you pick him up like a man to man?
I think it's really, you know, the top players, I think I had this theory about picking them up, but the way the top players move and how clever they are, it's really hard, you know. Mm. It's really, really difficult because these top players, and Suarez is one, football brains are brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And if you went for Manham, he'd go on the left wing where you'd have the fullback and him together, and then he'd drift in. You know, that clever. He's absolutely outstanding. As a footballer, he is one of the best players in the world, without a doubt.
Well, that brings me to one other point, because I was speaking to a Dutch colleague, and he said by the time his Ajax, he went on the scoring tear and so on, but he's not as effective. He wasn't as effective back then as he is now. Mm. And when Ajax got the fee for him that they did from Liverpool, which I believe was, 22 million, is that about right?
It wasn't just that, Gab. It was 22 million. The wages were £40,000 a week. It was a £22 million pound bargain.
They were uncorking champagne because he's good, but, you know. And then he goes and bites people and things like that.
He was tossed around everywhere.
Exactly, and they did offer him everywhere. I'd like to know from all you guys, starting with Peter, how much is that down to the managers that he's had at Liverpool perhaps giving him more license or using him in the right way? Or do you think it's just a case of a footballer maturing in mid-career?
I think he's improved immensely. Yeah, since he's been at Liverpool Football
Club. Is that something a manager can bring to him, or is it something he's got to do himself?
It's always difficult to relate that. I just think the penny's dropped. Obviously, Brendan's done a smashing job there in terms of the way they play, and he's got pace in the side. But this fella is improved. I like watching him. I hate saying it, but I do like watching him. He's a really, really top footballer. And I don't know, because I don't see him on the training ground. All I see is a top player out there week in, week out. And the biggest thing that Liverpool recently, I think he played against the Arsenal, he played him right side.
Yeah. Right. Against Monday.
Some people sulk about that. Nah, he got on with it. And I thought, not bad. Not bad. Some thought he was super.
Great tactics.
Yeah.
I think there's a mix here. I think I think he had been playing really, really well before he went on this streak, you know, before Brendan Rodgers come in. And you could see he was clearly a superstar. But, you know, the way, I think the great thing about Rodgers is he's gone from being, taken his template, which was the passing game, let's pass people to death. He's seen what Suarez can do. Let's get the ball to him. And now they break really quickly. So I think it's a mix of setup. I think it's very instructive what he did.
I think it's players because he likes to keep it. But with the likes of Stevie G, who wants to hit that killer pass, he's gone. He's such a good player. Yeah. I'm going to play to his strengths. That's a good coach.
Yeah.
That's a good
coach. Let your players define the way you're going to play. Yeah. Don't force them into a pigeonhole.
Is Stevie G the best player to come out of Heighton?
There's only one won a league championship, but yeah, I think he's been. by the way, outstanding footballer. Top draw.
We're ready to take questions in a minute, but something I need to throw to you, Peter, because you mentioned Jared there. And occasionally, I like to be passionate about football, occasionally I lose my cool. I was having a conversation with somebody who was talking about Paul Scholes. And I think Paul Scholes is a fantastic footballer. But he's not my favorite. And he was saying this tripe that you get thrown up occasionally.
The Manx Sammy Lee.
Somebody interviewed Xavi.
And that's not an insult.
And Xavi said that Paul Scholes was fantastic and he could have played for Barcelona. As if what's Xavi going to say? No, he's shit. He could never play here. You know, obviously, he's a great player. But one of the things that struck me was something he's talked about, sort of, Scholes was brilliant because he never hit the Hollywood pass. And it was in the context of Gerrard. It was a context of criticizing Gerrard for sometimes when he sprays those 40, 50-yard balls. Now, I actually, when somebody can do it accurately, whether it's Varane, Zidane did it occasionally, Hierro did it extremely well, Totti does it, I think it's a skill, and I think it's a kind of thing that you might only pull off one of four, but when you do that, you're through on goal and you score. You know, Scholes is sideways passing, and of course he did much more than that. I don't, you know, that has a value too, but a different one. What's your view on your midfielder who mixes it up? Do you give one guy license to do that as a manager? Did you do it as a player?
You're talking about two great players. You know, one of the best balls in football, and you missed it out a lad who used to hit it. He used to get it out of his feet, root hold it, and it Van Basten on a diag.
Yeah, I know.
For full.
But that's a Hollywood ball. That's bad. It's death by possession. We have to do this tiki-taka stuff, right? Nothing.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, if you play in front of people, boom, 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 defenders are going, cruising here, playing in front. But if at times, I'll tell you why, Adam, with Quinny did it brilliant. He pulled on people, and I said, hit the diag. We played Chelsea once, Desailly, Leboeuf, 4-0 up after 20 minutes, Quinny on the diag. So what I'm saying to you is, yeah, mix your game up. Boom, I love that possession. But if you do it in front of people, they'll squeeze you. They'll squeeze you.
When you
go like that and stretch people, you get your little time to go in into people. So it's just, it's opposites. Defenders don't like you going in there. So go in there, they'll drop off, and you get your space to go.
Do you know what?
It's a dead simple game.
Do you know what? Monksies wouldn't have seen him. He could knock a 40-year ball with the best of them. And he could also do the bits and pieces. I tell you what, look at the goal at Wembley in 86 to Lineker, the ball he knocks in. Yeah. You know, I tell you what, it's not a case of whether you do one thing or the other.
That's what YouTube is for.
But it's not a case of whether you do one thing or the other. It's a case of being effective. It's a case of hurting the opposition. And there are people who do and there are people who don't.
I had this conversation with Liverpool player when Joe Allen signed, and Joe Allen, when he first came into Liverpool side, was doing really well. And his possession stats were like 89-90% every week. And I said I was impressed with that. And the player I spoke to said, yeah, but Steven Gerrard's possession stats are 78%. But every now and again, one of those through balls will find.
He said that to me on the phone, and you should have heard what I said to him.
Yeah, it's a point that ties back to the England discussion as well. I can tell you what, when people play England, what they tend to fear is either Peter Crouch warming up, because that scares the shit out of people, and or pacey people and Gerrard or somebody from the back hitting a ball into space. You know, you're not going to outpass or scare anybody with your creative passing in midfield. Not most good European teams or good South American teams, something like that does worry them. Questions? Liverpool.
John, Liverpool fan. I've got a question about the summer, you know, Liverpool's transfer committee. Basically, what is the...
Pulls up his chair.
Who are these mysterious people who recommend and scout players? Because most people I see,
Dave Fallows is the main scout. Michael Edwards is the analyst. Ian Ayre is obviously the managing director. Brendan Rodgers is the manager. And it does... I spoke to John Henry about this when he came over and spoke to all the national press about Luis Suarez and the Arsenal offer. And I said to him, who has responsibility? And he says, you don't need to know. And I said, no, I don't need to know. But in terms of accountability, the fans, the people would like to know. And he said, no, they're just accountable to me. And I admired that in a way, because I do think that every transfer that does happen and doesn't happen now gets scrutinised like never before. And someone's got to be right, someone's got to be wrong. And this was an owner saying, I'm taking over all responsibility. So whatever they get right and whatever they get wrong, I will deal with. And I do think that's the right approach. And I also think... I also think
you can't sack the owner. You can sack any one of those four guys.
Exactly. And I also think it's not that far divorced. It's not that far divorced from when Bill Shankly had Ruben Bennett, Jeff Twentyman, people like that who go out and do his scouting. They were his eyes and ears. And then they would sit down with Peter Robinson, who would tell them what money was available, what they can and can't do. The only difference, I think, now is I think you've got a situation where Liverpool manager's got players on the bench, i.e. Iago Aspas and Luis Alberto, who he's got absolutely no interest in, who cost Liverpool Football Club £15 million, who he will bring Alberto on if Liverpool are 4 or 5 nil up in games. He will not play them from the start. He played Alberto from the start against Oldham, took him off at half-time. He clearly doesn't want those players, and I think that's where it breaks down. The question is, how does it proceed in the summer? I think there will be some kind of, if not restructure, then I think the manager will get more of a say in who comes, who goes.
The manager, in many ways, made a rub for his own back when he canned the Sturridge deal for the first time. And it kind of it caused problems within the club and it caused a lack of faith. I'm not sure this transfer committee is the right way to do it. I don't trust their judgments. And, for example, in this window, the last window, the manager wanted defenders and they didn't find any defenders. They're going to spend an awful lot of money in the summer if they're in the Champions League. They're going to commit big. Will they commit the right way? I don't know. I personally don't believe it's working.
Tony, sorry, can I ask a question about this? Because I sometimes like to think, like to pretend I'm a billionaire owner, like John W. Henry. The manager wants defenders in January, right? Mm. So he only has Sakho and Toure and Agger and Skrtel and Sissoko and Jose Enrique and Flanagan and Kelly. I mean, you're not in the Champions League. How many freaking defenders do you want? Why don't you play the ones you have there and make them better and bring some kids from the youth team?
First of all, look at the defence. You know, and like you can see why this morning.
That might have to do with the manager, though,
they,
right?
They would have got rid of... you can argue they didn't set up the defence in the correct way. But they would have got rid of both Agger and Skrtel. Last summer, they bought centre-halves, and none of them look anywhere near the level of a title-winning team. Go on. You're not...
Making a
face? No. I think Alori's a mistake, because Alori's a player who couldn't play for Liverpool this season. I forgot him.
No, that's nice.
He's a Gnard on loan, and so because he couldn't play for Liverpool. But Sakho, when he came in, I think the mistake with Sakho is playing £17 million for a player who would have been available for free 6 months later. I think that's an extravagance.
I think
Sacco's okay. I think the remarkable thing about Liverpool this season is that if you look at the team that is challenging for the title, there's no signings in it. It's a team that was already there, established. And I think that is where you give Brendan Rodgers all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
It's a team that was 7th, 8th for 2-3 years consistently that has challenged for the title. There's no signings.
And none of the signings the transfer committee have made have come through.
But by the same token, I'd argue that the transfer committee have stopped certain things from happening and have made... The transfer committee, Daniel Sturridge was theirs. He was the one the manager wasn't sure. Coutinho's brought him
by the first time. They could have had him 6 months before, and the manager killed him.
Peter, I want to just get you on this on the principle. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the manager model versus a manager with a director of football or transfer committee in this case. I have my own views on this. I wonder in the modern game when you literally have to negotiating with agents, mm-hmm. and you're negotiating image rights, they're all complex things. You got to do all that. You got to talk to the bean counters at the club. You have to go on the training pitch and coach the team. You got to deal with the scouts who scout your opposition. You got to be across players from all over the world. Is it too much for one person? Or what's your would you have been more comfortable? You had a director of football at Stoke, obviously.
I think the modern day game is with managers now. I think it's certainly changed. You know, if you're on about scouting players, I think you do need help. But it's knowing your strengths, isn't it? I mean, Brian Clough famously let Peter Taylor do it. Arguably one of the best managers of all time. But knew on the training ground when he said it, that was his strength. So being a manager is knowing your strengths. Now, I don't know. I think the manager has certainly got to have some input. Input without a doubt. And if it was up to me, because he has to work with them, I think he should get the final say. You know, we have a chat with people, whatever, which like I like doing with my staff anyhow. That's the way I did it because, you know, no man's an island. You have this top on it. But Bobby Saxton was an old pro. We used to, and he was brilliant at things. And he'd go, "Nah, you're wrong." And I used to go, "Let me have a think about it. And go away and think about it." Mm. So I think it's important to do that. And in the modern game, with its big businesses, big dough, it's a worldwide game. Your scouting network, your manager needs help. And so I'm not sure whether I'd go along with a committee, but you know you need help. People who you trust. I think that's the biggest thing. If you can get a group of lads there you can trust with your chief scout and whatever way you want to call them, director of football, I think that's important.
Just going back to Peter, what you were saying there about a manager's autonomy, and that you said the way to yourself then you need to trust the staff that you've got.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, at the minute, it's kind of being rumoured that Brendan Rodgers is negotiating a new contract at Liverpool.
Hmm.
And there's been some changes at the academy previously, and referring specifically to the transfer commission to Tony and Tony, do you think part of those negotiations would be even more power over that transfer committee?
Possibly. If I was Brendan Rodgers, I would be asking for more power. But I don't think it works as people see it. It works. I think where it's weak is that I think everyone gives a little bit of ground. And I think when everyone gives a little bit of ground, no one gets what they want. And I think what you've got now is you've got, I go back to Aspas and Alberto, there were people on the transfer committee who really wanted them, but the manager didn't. So the manager then doesn't pick them because he's got no faith in them. But then by the same token, the manager's got players he did want, like Ashley Williams, who the transfer committee says too old, too expensive. So that gets vetoed. So then the manager gets left with centre-backs that he doesn't want. And when everyone gives ground, you get that situation. And that's why Liverpool are now in the position where none of their signings are playing regular football.
There's a certain disconnect.
Except Mignolet.
Between you know what the committee wants and what the manager wants, and ultimately the manager lives and dies by results, so he's got to trust his team, and he should have the final say. I was talking to the chief executive of another club, who was very, very, very successful in his buys and all that, and he said well, everyone has a committee in a sense, but what we do, they had a head of recruitment. And what he'd do, he'd go to the manager and say, "What do you want?" And the manager would say, I want two centre halves, or I want a centre half and a left back. I said, "What sort of centre half do you want?" So, you know, he'd say, "I want a big one." He said, "Do you want him good on the ball?" You know, all that bollocks. But anyway, his head of recruitment would then come back with three names of people he thought would suit the team, and the manager would go, "I like him." And then the chief executive would go, "Well, okay, let's see if he's financially within our realm." And that seemed to work. The more people you get involved, the more confusion, in my opinion. I think Liverpool still are a little way away from being a coherent unit in terms of targeting players and bringing them in, and certainly for the manager's choice.
Yeah. We're going to another question, but just on the back of that, in this day and age, given the amount of time that managers have to put in at work, it's all well and good for somebody to come to you and give you three names, but if you're a manager, how are you going to know who these guys are? Assuming it's not somebody who plays in the Premier League. At best, you might have seen them on television, you might have played against them, you're not going to know how they've been doing of late. Some of these names, maybe you might have heard of them, but you're not going to be in a position to make a decision, right? I think of when Brendan first arrived, who did he sign? He signed Borini and Allen, who were people he'd coached before.
Yeah, but that was Liverpool had no scouts at that time. That was the big problem. That summer, Liverpool had Dave Fallows.
What that suggests to me is that those were the players that Brendan knew.
Yeah.
And so if you'd come to him and say, like, "Hey, do you want to go and sign Sergio Busquets?" He would have said, "Sergio
who?" But the bigger problem that summer was there was no one to come to Brendan. There's no one to come and say, "How about this player?" Basically, what you had was the manager, the chief exec, and the owners. There was no scouts. Liverpool had a summer with no scouts.
I find that kind of terrifying. Next question. All right, well, I have a question of my own for Peter on the back of that. When you were managing, you would have had, I've been playing towards the end of the career, when you were signing players from other nations and things like that, was it a case of your scouts coming to you and saying, like, this is the guy, here's some DVDs? Did you have to put faith in people?
I made a big mistake in the transfer market at Sunderland night. I signed a fella called Lillian Loslons. And I seen him play for Lille against Manchester United and Celtic. He was brilliant. I mean,
even though he had a girl's name.
Exactly. Well, I was going to say that, but I thought, you know. But I signed him for Sunderland. I tell you, I must have sent his kid brother, because he was minging, by the way. He was absolutely.
When does that?
And by the way,
when does that all, Peter?
But I seen him.
Time?
I seen him play. By the way, this kid left Sunderland, went to Bordeaux, got them in the Champions League. He was brilliant when he went back to Bordeaux. I think the mistake I made was I didn't go into it in depth. He just had a breakup with his missus, so that was a problem.
Should have been on top of the world.
Yeah. But that was a problem. So. You know, instead of getting someone to go in depth, I've got a kid come there whose head's up his arse, so to speak. So, you know, there's that many things go on with players, especially from abroad and sort of live. North East is a great place to live, but some of them, they don't take to it.
Because someone asked the question, and you know, so like, it got drowned out. When did you see it? When did you see it was a mistake?
Oh, he come in and he in training. I rung the chairman and says, that check gone through?
there was two players that at Liverpool where that happened within one training session. One was Andrea De Senna, who the players straight away knew. Yeah. They were basically just dinking balls over him and anyone could run in behind him.
Can I just say something about this guy? You talk about breakdown, and I'm sure you'll name the manager who signed him in a minute. This is a person who obviously played in Serie A. This is a guy who had only ever played as a wing back. He had never played
in a 3-5.
In a 3-5-2. He was also a guy who, I think it was 24, 25 at that point. I think he'd been capped once, for the reason being that he wasn't particularly good. I mean, Maldini retired a long time before that. It's not like he was in that much competition left back. I saw the fee that was paid. And the idea that you're going to take somebody in mid-career with those characteristics and turn him into a different position, make him play in a four,
I remember
seemed demented.
There was a Liverpool player at the time who won't name, but he's got an encyclopedia.
Name the Liverpool manager at the time.
Rafa Benitez. Yeah. And there was a Liverpool player.
How could somebody like that get it so wrong?
Because Eduardo Massi became his chief scout, and he had too much faith in a scout who got a lot wrong. But there was a Liverpool player at the time who said to me, and it was very basic, but someone with encyclopedic knowledge of football, he said, I get the Football Italian magazine every week. I've never seen Andrea De Senna's name mentioned. And it's one of those where it's basic. But if, don't get me wrong, you can find people that no one else has seen.
He did score a great goal for Liverpool.
He scored against Real Madrid and Manchester United.
There you go,
which is no bad thing.
He does it in big games, unlike Suarez.
The other player who was written off by his teammates very, very quickly was Andy Carroll. The Liverpool players who trained with him every day in the first few sessions, he was nicknamed the traffic cone very, very quickly because he had the same kind of movements as the cones that were laid out for training. Andy wrote him off.
Well, Andy Carroll, I think, is a nice segue because one of the, and we're done in a minute, so this your final thought, final image in your mind will be Andy Carroll in his ponytail. Maybe his fetching beard as well, is to this day, while obviously thinking of England at the World Cup, thinking of other countries, when they play English teams, they're rarely scared of English technique. Not that it's bad, and obviously there's been a lot of great players, but what terrifies them is players who are big and athletic and set pieces and all that stuff. And I know Andy Carroll, you know, some people treat him as a running joke, and he's had issues off the pitch, and he's had physical injuries. But he is big and he is athletic. And when he jumps in the air, not only is he enormous, he has hang time and he stays there. And that scares the shit out of other people, that and pace, as I said before. Peter, you look at somebody like this, was he a, I mean, obviously didn't work out here, but could more have been done? Could something else have been done? Would you have spent that money on Carroll?
Different players have got different attributes and different ways of playing them. Now, the most successful Irish team was under Jack Charlton. Now, international football, as I said before, is possession. Know what Jack used to do? Because everyone was used to go bang. Cascarino, Quinn, he had some good players. The boy Outon, the boy Townsend, Sheedy, Whelan. Good players. But tell
they,
you what,
they're not the ones who scared anybody.
No, but what I'm saying, he got it up the top end early and got round them. And depending on what style. Now, Quinn, like I mentioned before, he did scare people. I had two wingers. I thought, I'm going to get it out wide, get crosses in, get Phillips around him, squeeze. Different class. But he had good technique.
Season.
He had a good technique, Quinny, as well. He did have a great season. When I first went to Sunderland, we went down with 40 points. My two signings, Colton, goalie, and Quinn, got injured. And that's how influential they were.
So
and you can play to your strengths and you don't have to, like we say before, it's not a long ball because we wrenching Hullet with diags. But Bobby Charlton used to hit more diags than anyone I've ever seen. David Beckham, you know, getting out of the street hitting the diags. It's a good ball. So the thing is with Carroll, Big Sam has a certain way of playing, and he's been desperate to get Carroll back. Desperate to get a crack, and he's got a lad, Kevin Nolan, Scouts lads as well, who plays off him really, really well. Yeah. So it's horses for courses, if you know what I mean. I don't think he fits Liverpool's bill, but it certainly fits the way Sam wants to play. You know,
well,
so
I mean,
he kind of did
fit Liverpool's bill, because like the way Dalglish was setting up to play, you know, he was buying a wing and he wanted the ball coming in, and then he saw Suarez. I'm like, oh, shit, you got Bill around him. It's like, so Andy Carroll became secondary, you know?
Well, you basically imply by that had Suarez not been there, maybe the club would have made more of an effort to build around Carroll?
Without a doubt. And also, they picked the wrong winger in Down. And, you know, the man who should have been called the Cone is Down. Because what was worrying about him is you talk to people. He's brilliant in training and crap on the, you know, in the games. And, you know, when he's playing with his mates, he's great. We're all a bit like that, aren't we?
But, Gabby, you used the word fear about Andy Carroll, but there are plenty of things that people are scared of that never hurt them. And I think Andy Carroll at international level is that kind of thing. Who was the last centre forward of that ilk? I think you go back to the players people were talking about. Niall Quinn, Tony Cascarino.
Big Duncan was...
Jan Koller. But what did Duncan do?
Scored against Liverpool once.
No, but he scored four times against Liverpool, and Liverpool scored four times.
No, but he was that, one game. What I'm saying is that ilk. Now, Quinny wasn't prolific, but I got someone with him.
But I think Quinny,
you know,
was
I mean?
A better. I think
he's very intelligent.
Quinny was a clever player.
Very intelligent.
I don't think Duncan or
fact, that clever. Big Quinny, we used to play head tennis a lot, little game, you know, feet. Quinny's feet were the best at the club. That's how good he was. Head tennis was first pick.
So what was the problem? He couldn't run?
No. Well, he didn't have pace, no. But when we were at Everton, the last player to get picked was Gary Lineker. That tells you, no, God's honest truth, that tells you the story, doesn't it?
But who's
and
the
he had pace and he could get beyond, he was a finisher. But you play an interim.
Ibrahimovic.
He went out a couple of teams and he got under control by the time he came back.
Because he's also
sugars in it.
You just asked him about Ibrahimovic. No, because he's a lot more skillful. He can do more things with a ball. But, I mean, if you're talking about who's a top center forward who's not good, then he's not a top center forward. But, I mean, in the vein, you could maybe see like Edinson Cavani,
but you said
Fernando Llorente. You know, there are players like that.
But you used the word fear. I think if there is a fear, that there's a fear of something that never hurts them. Right. It's the bogeyman.
I may be true.
No, you can play. You can play to people's. you can play to people's strengths, and defenders do fear that. Do fear a diagonal when it's a big centre foot. Toshack used to play for your mob a few years ago when Keegan was around him. I tell you what, and he had a couple of wingers. They were hard to defend against.
Anyway, with Shattuck, we're going to actually leave you with this. Somebody wants to know who's going to win the league. So I know you all love making predictions. So just one word answers would do the trick. Tony?
I'll go last.
Man City.
I'm going Manchester City.
Man City with me tip at the start of the season. I think it's Chelsea to lose.
There you go. There's your answer. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We really, certainly for myself, I enjoyed spending the evening with you. We will probably be sticking around having a drink
was
or two.
Was that slow hand clap? Was that slow hand clap?
Some of us will be sticking around and having a drink, at least until Tony gets us all kicked out. But please, thank you.
And then we'll go to Mesa.
Thanks to my colleague, Tony Barrett, my boss, Tony Evans, and most of all, thanks to Peter Reed for taking the evening out. Thank you.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.